You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special edition of Spilling Ink Live, the talk show that brings you behind the book to meet the authors and artists in the publishing industry. You may notice that we are on a little bit different platform today. We had some technical difficulties with our usual Google Hangout, so now we are using a fancy new program called StreamYard, and hopefully it's working, and you're seeing this all live on Facebook as I speak. But I do want to talk a little bit about our sponsor real quick. Our sponsor is Book Branders, and they have helped the show out a lot, and they've actually helped a lot of indie authors out a lot. They are a business built solely for the purpose of helping indie authors. They do things that, well, the kind of things that I don't want to do, like formatting and editing and website design and all this other stuff. That's like, man, I just want to write my books and be happy and tell stories. So they do the hard stuff for you. Really cool company. It's easy to find them at www.bookbranders.com. And I am joined, as always, by the lovely Miss Katie Salidas.
Thanks for the wonderful intro, Jason. This is a cool platform. I think we're definitely going to have to look at utilizing it more often. And for all of the live streaming viewers on Facebook, if you like this platform, let us know in the comments, and we'll see if we can't start moving our show a little bit more to this more interactive venue.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, the bad thing about having Facebook right here is that now that I'm looking at Facebook and all the things that pop up on Facebook. So, well, guys, we have two wonderful guests with us here today. We have Miss Jenna Green and Mr. Mark Watson. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. I'm doing excellent. And as I mentioned, when I first saw you, you look fabulous, like a Canadian Crocodile Dundee.
There is something to be said about the practicality of a good cowboy hat. Not like a cheap one that you get with a 24 case of beer, but you spend a little bit of money and a good cowboy hat goes a long way, even up here.
Well, and I've heard that if you use gambling winnings to buy it, that it actually adds to the value and utility of the hat.
That is absolutely the truth, because I would never have been able to afford a hat this good if it wasn't for a couple of lucky spins with a one-arm bandit.
Nice. All right, Jenna, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good. There's a toddler running around my house. So if you see my eyes dart around, I'm just making sure she's not eating anything she's not supposed to or putting it up her nose.
Yeah. Well, and if we hear her go quiet, then we know that there's a problem, because it's never good when toddlers are quiet.
I can still hear her, so we're okay right now.
You know, the last show that I did, I was thinking that my youngest daughter is old enough now to kind of hang out for herself for a little bit. And as I'm doing the show, I keep hearing random noises. And I finally go out and look, and she is trying to strangle the dog who is chewing her hat. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't even be out of the room for a few minutes. And this is my 5-year-old. She should be able to entertain for a few minutes without me having to watch her.
I can say that with an 11 and an 8-year-old, no. Like right now, I still have to have somebody looking after them, because I know at some point, if I don't sequester myself away somewhere and lock a door and get extra sets of hands, they're just going to bust in and start screaming at me about each other, probably.
Yeah, that's how they roll. That's seems like that's their life's mission. I'll tell you what, if you've ever taken road trips with your kids, oh my Lord, you know what? Some kids travel really well. My kids are not those kids. They are not. They're little monsters in the car.
I don't know. Like, mine are the former, not the latter. So yeah. I'm not going to brag. I'm just going to say that they are excellent travelers, be it wonderful in long car rides or long flights. They have always been great.
That's awesome. Count yourself very blessed. That's a great thing to have. All right, guys, I want you to introduce yourself a little bit for us. Tell us a little bit about what you do, what you write, and we'll start with Mark, since you're right there.
Sure thing. My name is Mark Watson. I am a genre fiction author from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. In the last, let's say, 14 months, I've been fortunate enough to read books. There was a debut in 2017. That would be Death Dresses Poorly right here. I always keep it nearby because I have way too many copies kicking around. That is a dark comedy urban fantasy, very similar in tone and theme to a lot of things written by people like Neil Gaiman. And then in spring of last year, and then also in December, I released two parts of my epic fantasy and almost science fantasy, I would call it, duology. It was a monster of a 250,000 word book that I split into two. So I've got Catching Hell Part One, that's Journey, that guy's right there. And I got Catching Hell Part Two, Destination, which I'm particularly proud of because I never thought this book would see the light of day, and I'm very happy for it. Other than that, I'm married, as I've already mentioned. I've got two active boys who give me absolutely no free time, and I couldn't be more thankful about that. And I work full-time at an engineering company because, as of yet, writing is not paying the bills.
That would be, yeah. See, that's the goal, isn't it? Is to someday writing pays the bills. I know that's my goal, man. I want to be like Josh Robertson over there, who's saying something about how we shouldn't trust you. I'm not sure what that's all about. Do you know Josh Robertson, Mark?
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I have a black hat on. A black cowboy hat usually signifies something bad.
Okay. All right. I don't know what's going on, Josh. You'll have to give us the scoop on this later. But what about you, Jenna? What do you write?
I write young adult, mostly fantasy. I have a young adult high fantasy series. First book is called Imagine. Second is Reality. Third is Heritage. And the fourth, when I write it, will be called Legacy. I have a young adult contemporary called Heroine. And I have a brand new young adult series just starting. It's that in that dystopian genre. So it just launched a couple weeks ago. And so I am busily promoting it and trying to write the sequel. When I'm not writing, I'm a teacher, so I'm either writing or marking or lesson planning or running after a toddler. And when I can sneak in a nap, I do.
No, your books are high fantasy, you said. Can you give us a little bit more depth into them there? Because high fantasy kind of covers a pretty wide range nowadays.
When I talk about writing fantasy, there's even subgenres within fantasy. So my Imagine series is that high fantasy where you are somewhat expected to have elves, dwarves, and different cultures, a lot of which I have created myself. When I talk about my new fantasy series, Reborn, it's sometimes called dystopian literature, sometimes called low fantasy. There are no elves, there are no dwarves. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I have that in my other series. But this is more at the Hunger Games Divergent level of fantasy, where a lot of it is very based in reality with some fantastical elements. In the case of this book, it's investigating whether or not people have had previous lives, whether the marks on their skin mean that they have lived past lives and whether they have a connection to the past. So in this book, she's enslaved because of the fact that she is presumed to have had previous lives. The culture thinks, well, that's not fair. So she is in the first chapter of the book, she's sold into slavery, and then spends the duration of the book trying to figure out, is it a myth that she is this connection to real life? Is it a curse, or is it a destiny? So we spend a lot of time investigating that idea.
What's the name of that one?
Reborn.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Just listening to your pitch, I'm like, ooh, this sounds badass, like a fantasy witch hunt. But I don't know. I guess that, yeah, that's fantasy. And Josh, who keeps commenting on here, Joshua Robertson also writes kind of a darker fantasy. So fantasy covers so much. But like when you look at like Game of Thrones, because that's considered fantasy, but what kind of fantasy is that,
would you say? That's political high fantasy, if you want to be specific.
Political high fantasy.
Yeah, it deals with the politics of the different families, and yet it still has elements of magic, and it still has elements like the dragons and other worldly creatures within that world.
Okay. I like it. Well, and I think that I don't necessarily... See, I like fantasy, but I keep talking about her. I love Victoria Schwab. She's my girl. But it's fantasy, and there's magic, and there's swords in it, but it's also it's not whimsical really in any way. It is very dark. I mean, it is. I tried to get my mom to read it, and she gave it back. She was like, "No, that's dark stuff. I don't want to read that." I was like, "It's not going to turn you into a freaking frog or something." But I really like the dark, gritty fantasy too. Mark, could you hold up those the last two books that you were telling us about? The one with the flames on the cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit more about these? Because the one looks like to me, almost like a Band of Brothers-y kind of cover, which I immediately love because I love Band of Brothers. But tell us a little bit more about this duology.
I would love to. So part one. So you're absolutely right. There's a marked difference between the two, because in this one, it is about our two main characters, Aryu, who is the one with wings, and Johan, who fought the quest for manhood, and upon their return to their home, they're expecting all this revelry for them returning successfully after over a year away from their homes at a young age, only to find that their home is destroyed by an army of robots, which is something that this particular part of the world has shunned. Technology and magic of all kinds really shunned because keep attempting to destroy the world, and has done so, at least in this world, a number of times. Journey is very much I think the cover really speaks to it. They're just two young souls who are about to head out on this adventure, and they're forcing these evils that they never thought that they would ever have to deal with. In part two, Destination, the new one, it's fire. And it is dark and it is intense, and it is very much all about the battle to come. The phoenix on the cover is a reference to one of the main characters who travels with Aryu. His name is Nixon of the Fire and Ash, and he is a phoenix of this world. But the phoenix in this sense is actually an incredibly large Scottish Highlander who almost looks like he has fire for hair. Very strong, very powerful, also very tongue-in-cheek, like any good Scotsman is. And this particular story is, as the two main characters are separated, now they are coming back together. Now they have traveled to the world of technology and to the world of magic, and they are about to come all together. And this is the story of the battle that happens. And the truth is that this battle takes place probably more than half of the book itself. It is a battle of epic fantasy as they were meant to be, and as I always wanted to write.
That sounds amazing. You know, what's cool is everyone here tonight writes some kind of fantasy. I am probably the least fantasy of the group because mine are kind of paranormal suspense. So they're grounded in reality, but they still have magical elements. So there's still a little bit of fantasy, but that's awesome. And I think that one thing that might be cool to talk about tonight, especially since I've got the three of you, you know, Mark and Jenna and Katie on here, is kind of creating characters in these fantasy worlds. Because, you know, we all draw a little bit from real life when we're creating characters, but sometimes characters in fantasy are a lot more exaggerated. You can get away with being more exaggerated, not only in their personalities and physiques, but in powers they might have, which is incredible. And I think that's one of the reasons people love fantasy so much, because it isn't necessarily just grounded in reality. You know, it can be anything that comes out of our minds, which is amazing. But, you know, Katie, can you give us an idea of how you go about creating characters in your fantasy? Because you cover a wide range here, from, you know, from werewolves to vampire gladiators. I mean, you've got all sorts of crazy shit going on.
And the vampire gladiators were my favorite.
I love those.
Like doing the whole underdog thing and flipping the expectation where, you know, vampires are always the top of the food chain. Well, what if they're not? What if, because of the sheer numbers, humanity was able to overtake the supernatural races and then enslave them and use their weaknesses against them? And so that's how the Chronicles came about. And that was the sparking idea. It was, how do I flip this to break everyone's expectation and then make the character come back around and still become the hero of the day? And a lot of times when we're creating characters, we just start with that initial spark. We're like, well, I need a character to fit this role. But in order to give that character life and give them depth, you've got to go beyond that. And you draw from what you know of people and what you know of social interactions. And you use that to layer in personality and quirks. And I like to call it creating a rule book. You give your characters a set of rules that belong specifically to them. And then you throw the conflict at them that goes against the rule book to see how they overcome it. And that's kind of how I approach it. I don't start off knowing the character fully. As I throw things at them, I'm constantly updating the rule book. And then as I revise, I go back to the rule book and make sure that I stayed true to what I had intended for that character.
What about you, Jenna? What do you do when you're sitting down to create these characters? Do you have kind of an idea of your cast of characters already in your mind, or are you coming up with them as they're going to suit your needs? Or do you focus on one character and then kind of branch out from there?
I usually start with my main character. In the Imagine series, the main character of Kat was based on two of my roommates, a Kate and a Kathy, that both became Kat. And they had qualities that I admired. I was 18. I was shy. I was quiet. I was uncertain. And they had balls. They knew who they were, and they had a bit of spunk. And so combining those two personas into a Spitfire kind of character, but lowering their age so that they were also a bit more naive and innocent about the world made Kat just a beautiful character. The younger character in that series, Becky, who's only 10, who's the idealist, the reader, the imagination, that's a younger version of me. In Reborn, we have a character named Lexel, who's based on a former student I had named Lexi. So where'd you get the name from? There you go. But she's someone I knew when she was in grade 6, so kind of 10, 11, and she didn't know where her strength was. She didn't know all that she had within her. That would be my daughter.
Get her on camera.
Hi, Olivia.
Well, she's an inspiration for a character too. In Reborn, there's a young character named Sierra who's 5. Now my daughter is, of course, only 2. And I created that character before this little munchkin was even born. But when I write Sierra now in the sequel, I really think of Olivia. It really helps channel the young, what would a really, really, really young child think and see and do? And it's obviously very, very different than what I would at 37 years old. So she's very helpful in writing that character. Not always helpful in live podcasts, but very helpful in writing that character.
You know, the thing about writing as a profession or even as a hobby is it makes you a student of humanity. You're constantly looking at the way people interact with each other, at the different personality types and how those are reflected in how people carry themselves and what they say and what they do and their facial tics and their body language. And if you really sit down and focus and let yourself, you know, take all of that in, there's so much inspiration out there that can be drawn in and then used to create these characters.
Well, and one thing that I think that we can actually learn from Olivia's interaction there with you, Jenna, is that life is also messy, and we need to be careful as authors to make sure we're portraying that accurately. Not everything goes according to script. Not everything goes according to plan. And in fact, when things go according to plan, a lot of times it's not as interesting. It just ends up flat out boring if things just go according to plan.
So funny that you say that. I used that word specifically today when I was talking to the group that I was talking to at the library about writing characters. Jason, you always say the kill your darlings quote.
Yeah.
And I used that. I said, if your characters are boring or have no reason to be on the page or are not serving a purpose to the story, get them out of there, kill them off, get rid of them, because if they're boring to you writing them, they're going to be boring to a reader and no one's going to care about them.
Yeah. Nobody wants to read about the boring crap that we have to do in our lives. No, they want to hear about the good shit, the cool stuff. So Mark, we haven't forgotten about you down there. And it really, to me at least, without reading or having read your books yet, it sounds like you have a lot of really good interpersonal interaction that's going to be going on in these books. At least from your description of them, you know, how did you go about creating realistic characters for your story?
Oh, the answer to that one's quickly. It's a quick answer. I didn't try and create necessarily a realistic one, especially in something as broad as epic fantasy. My slate is wiped clean. I have so much history in the genre to draw from. If we kind of set the bar of organized epic fantasy at Tolkien and move up from there, plus all the schlock that I was consuming in the 80s and the 90s, I leaned into those tropes. I have two characters who follow a character arc very, very similar to so many other different characters. I just wanted to put my own kind of bend on them. I really wanted to write characters who I didn't necessarily associate with. I've written characters loosely based on myself or people that I know, but I wanted to wipe the slate completely clean when I made these ones and think about some of the more popular character arcs and what I can do with them in order to make them Mark Watson's characters as opposed to history's characters. And maybe they're just gonna kind of fall into the gray area and barely muddy the water for some people, but I really did try to create characters that I didn't necessarily relate to, but I really wanted to find out how they would go on the journeys that I would send them on, because they weren't me and they weren't people that I knew. They were wholly original characters in so much as they weren't inspired by people I know as much as they were tropes and characters from all the different things. Like I said, I was eating
up
for
the starting point, though. The whole idea of using the character archetypes as your blueprint, I mean, that's kind of what we all do in a way. We know what characters are supposed to fit what roles, but you put your own personal spin on them. So whether or not you're drawing from somebody you know or you're just drawing from the archetype, that's an excellent way to begin that character creation process and then see where it goes from there.
Well, yeah, and I think that's fantastic. And I love it that you are you're experimenting with characters that are nothing like you. I like that. I think that's a really cool way to flex your muscles as a writer and as a person. And I think that actually helps your brain. It helps your brain to work out problems that you didn't know were there before and helps you to expand as a writer. So I think that's excellent. You know, almost all my characters are women, and I'm obviously not a woman. But I absolutely love writing women, and I don't know how much of me is in there, but it's all the things that I wish I was. You know, it's just these strong, fierce women that give no shit and kick ass and take names, but they're still real people. And I'm like, man,
yeah, everybody remember that. Jason wishes that he was a strong kick-ass woman.
You know, I kind of do. Women are amazing. But you know what? In real life, women kind of have tough lives. You guys got to deal with a lot of shit in the real world. Yeah, yeah. I know, Jenna.
Absolutely.
But no, there's something about a kick-ass woman that I absolutely love. You know, I love all the books and the movies about them. So, yeah.
In your next life, Jason, maybe you will be lucky enough to come back as a kick-ass woman.
That would be awesome.
But, you know, okay, we've all given our methodology. So, Jason, how do you create your characters? I mean, obviously, you're coming from a point of writing a male or writing a female as a male. How do you twist your characters to fit in that female perspective?
Well, when I start writing as a woman, one of the things that I really don't want to do is write my characters in such a way that they look like they've been written by a man. You know, my characters are not helpless. My characters are extremely smart, and maybe they're beautiful, maybe they're not beautiful, but they all have very strong qualities and they don't need other people around them. You know, they may fall in love, they may have a great friend, but when it comes down to it, they can get shit done on their own. And that's what I love about them so much. But when I'm writing them, it's really easy for me to kind of get in the heads of these female characters, because in the book I'm writing, this is going to sound ridiculous, Katie, but the book I'm writing right now, my character is right now aged 16 years old, and she's going through all of her own personal adolescent crap, as well as crap with her friends and some really crazy paranormal stuff that's happening in her life. And I am really enjoying being a teenage girl right now. So it has been so much fun, because when I get into the writing zone, I'm just imagining, okay, there's all these crazy things happening with my body, and then, you know, I'm already feeling strange about what's happening with me, and then now how am I going to be relating to what's happening to my best friend over here, or things that my mom's going through as her and my father are getting a divorce. And you know, I've lived a whole life of different crazy experiences, just like every one of us has. And so I think that our own personal experience definitely goes into it. But some of it, I just for writers and other artists that create, I think that some of it's just kind of a gift that we get in there and we do it. And if it turns out beautifully, then that's a wonderful thing. You know, that I sat down and wrote a couple pages the other day, and I had tears in my eyes when I was done, and they were happy tears, and it was incredible, because I was really feeling what this woman was feeling and what she was going through, and I was like, man, that's good. That is good. I love it. So I don't really have a secret trick to get into the zone, except for that I live with mostly women, and I've always dated women. I've always loved women. And I think that the females of this world are just incredible. They're amazing. I mean, all people are, but especially women, because you not only have to do that, everything that men have to do, you also have to do more, because you carry, I think, the entire emotional weight of a relationship and a household as well, whether we or not we want to admit it. I think that the women carry most of that weight for us, and most of the weight of you know, child rearing. You can be a great dad, and I like to think that I'm a good dad, but there's no denying that my wife does all the really hard stuff. Without her, I don't know what the hell I would do. I would lose my mind. And so I like to be able to pretend that I'm just these strong, amazing female characters that can really get it done in the world.
I like that. That's a really good way of describing it. And one of our comments from Joshua Robertson, he says that I really enjoy writing female characters too, because it comes from a place of recognizing the strengths of femininity. And that's wonderful. And I think the same applies too for women writing a male character. We can look at the strengths of that, you know, whether it's male or female, we can look at the strengths of the other gender and really appreciate them and employ them as we develop the story further.
I can say that I'm terrified of writing female characters, and I have some, and I have a female character as one of the main characters in Catching Hell, and the book that I'm working on right now actually has the two main characters are both women, but I'm terrified of it, just to touch on a lot of the same points that were brought up, because I was raised by a single mom. I have an older sister and I have a wonderful wife. I better get it right, because these are the people who have shaped my lives, not just the women who have shaped my lives. These are the people who have shaped my lives. And if I don't get it right, I'm going to feel that I've done a disservice to them and everything that they have done for me in order to help make me the person that I am right now. So I will write female characters, but I do so like I'm walking on eggshells, because I got to make sure I get it right. And I'll have some checked over by my wife, just to not boost the authenticity. I still want to have my voice, but just to make sure that I'm not overstepping somewhere, or even just like little things that I have absolutely no idea, anything from anatomy to mentality to emotionally, making sure that I get it as accurate as I can.
Well, and I think that your fear is not ill-founded. I think that a lot of writers feel that same kind of trepidation when we're, you know, if say I'm a white writer writing about a person of color, and you know, I know I've heard lots of banter, and I'm sure we've all seen lots of banter on Facebook about, you know, is it okay to write outside of your skin color? And I think it certainly is. You know, I think that we need to remember that we are all human beings. And I may not have lived the same lives as anyone else or anyone on this panel tonight. That's for damn sure. But I can still write like a human being, because that's what we all are. And I think that if you choose to write that character, whether it is a woman or a person that is a, you know, of a skin color that's not the same as yours, or a sexual orientation that's not the same as yours, you just got to dive in. What did Joe just write there?
He's asking if I'm in the witness protection program, because it looks like I'm very well locked in some kind of room somewhere.
No,
I'm not Joe. I'm not this. This is the quietest place in my house right now. It's hockey day in Canada. I got two kids downstairs who are watching the game, and one of which will wander around and cause trouble anywhere he can in all the best ways. And so I was able to secure this spot. This is Dad's spot right now, but I was not able to accessorize it in any way, shape, or form ahead of time.
I think that's okay. Hey, Jenna, you've got the same kind of thing going on. You're hanging out in Olivia's room, right?
I'm in Olivia's bedroom, and she's not happy I'm on her bed right now. But I can watch her play with the dollhouse and play with her toys and still do this. It is a decorated room, but nothing can be in her reach. Otherwise, instead of going to bed at night, yes, she'll just jump and climb. So
that's like when you sit with,
above.
When you decorate
I completely understand that. I have the same thing in my youngest room. Everything is above the height she can reach at. Polish it.
Well, and your youngest is a climber, Katie. So if there's any way she can get to it, she will.
God help me with that one. I've always said she will rule the world one day if she lasts that long, because I swear to God, she's got a death wish.
But what I would say before I was laughing at Joe is that whatever role you decide to write, you really just dive into it. Dive into it with your whole heart and your whole head, and just write it like a human being. Or if you're writing an orc, don't write it like a human being. You know, write it like an orc. But I think you know what I mean there, because there is so much potential out there for expanding outside of what we are. You know, I recently talked to a gentleman, another author, and he was telling me how when he writes about people that are not of the same faith as he is. If he's writing someone who is a Methodist or this or that or the other thing, that he will actually call up ministers or priests or whoever it is that he intends to write about and say, "Hey, would you mind if I come to your church and sit in on a service?" And he said he does that because he wants to be respectful to their faiths. And I thought that was fantastic. The book I'm writing has some characters that identify as LGBTQ, and over this winter, I actually went on a little writing retreat with some friends, and I sat down with a few people, and I said, "I'd like to interview you because I know that you're in a same-sex relationship, and that's not something that I have a lot of experience with. So I'd like to get an idea of what your life is like, and what things might be the same and what might be different than my life, and how it was for you to grow up and to fall in love and to deal with society in general." And I got a lot of amazing and heartbreaking stories. But it really helped to open my eyes, because that's something that I've never experienced. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that, "Hey, I've never been through this before. I have no idea what the hell this is like." So when you get into that situation, and for you, Mark, if you want to write a good, strong female character, sit your ass down with a good, strong female in your life and talk to them for a little bit. And you talk to them about some of the things that you might be nervous writing about, and they'll give you a freaking straight answer, man. If you ask them, they'll give you a straight answer, and it really helps, and even if you don't use everything they tell you word for word, just like when I was interviewing my friends for this newest book, I'm not going to use all their personal experiences. Some things are theirs and they're private and they're for them alone, but it has really expanded my understanding of life and of people. And I think that is extremely important when we're creating characters, is to meet more people, do more living. Because even if you're writing something that is in high fantasy, or if you're writing gritty dark fantasy, or if you're writing detective crime thrillers, it doesn't matter. Meet more people, because you're going to find cool characters out there in real life. And then all those little bits and pieces of people that you meet, you'll be able to paste together into this, one really cool character that you can use.
Yeah, it's that whole student of humanity nature of being an author. You've got to go out and experience people in order to be able to write them truthfully.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Whether you've got a character that has magical powers, whether you have a character that has traveled to a different realm, whether you have a character that is young or old or male or female or human or not, what you're writing is emotions and their reactions to loss, death, tragedy, new circumstances, the unexpected. It doesn't matter. You're writing emotions and how they react to them, no matter who the character is or what they are.
Well, you are 100% right. And I think, Joe, what did you say now? Oh, yeah. Well, Truman Capote is Truman Capote, so we'll just leave it at that. you're 100% right. And a lot of people, especially authors that are just getting into the game, what a story is not your plot. It is how your character reacts to the things that happen to them, how those things change that character. That is your story. So all the other fun, fantastical stuff that happens, that's great. The readers need that. We need it as authors because it's awesome to write. But the story is your character. It's how the character reacts. So, Jenna, you are spot on with that. And that's a good thing for all of us to remember, no matter what level we are at or think that we're at in our writing, is that it is all about that character. It doesn't matter how badass of a crazy doomsday device you have created. You've got to have a strong, relatable character for that doomsday device to matter at all to the readers. Because if not, they're not going to give a shit.
Yeah, that's the key element right there. If the readers don't care about the character, it doesn't matter what they do in the story, because there's no point to it. They've got no drive to have an interest in whether or not they save the day. It's what makes the hero and the villain is one's doing ultimate good, one's doing ultimate evil. And we care because we want to see how that character gets to their end result. Does the hero destroy the villain in the end? And do they destroy them in a way that's absolutely appropriate and satisfying based on what these characters have been doing the whole time? Or do the characters just kind of flatline across the page and we don't really care what happens? Who cares if the villain wins? Who cares if the hero wins? It's all about that relationship that the reader builds with the character that makes that story really interesting and gets us excited to see what happens next.
Now, I'm going to ask you guys, because this is another, this is, I guess you would say, high political fantasy, a book by Seth Dickinson called The Traitor Baru Caramont. Really weird title. But this is one that for, you know, 300 and some pages, you get very, very, very attached to these characters. I mean, it is all about character, and there's all sorts of crazy shit going on. It's incredibly entertaining, but it is all about character. And this book will just rake your guts across sharp knives and then coals and then like a latrine pit, and then you get infected and then you're wrapped up in bed and then somebody rips the bandages off. I mean, it is just, it is brutal, and it messed me up damn good. But it was all because it was focused on the characters and how all of these terrible things affected those characters. And I was so emotionally invested in it. It was really a quite brilliant piece of writing in that way.
So what was your question, Jason?
I didn't have a question. I was just talking again. I don't know. Have any of you guys read that book?
No, I can't say that, man. I have. I'm a notorious non-reader.
Oh, no.
You did all your reading in the 80s and 90s?
I do still read. I've mentioned this before. I talked to Joe about it as well on his show, that I'm come across as the anti-author. I find a lot of times when I start surrounding myself with authors, really talented authors such as yourselves, I'm always kind of the odd one out because I don't do a whole lot of reading, not for lack of trying. One day I'll get back into it, but I'm just a busy guy. I got a whole bunch going on right now. And if I have some free time to read, then that means I have some free time to write, or I have some free time to do neither of those things and just veg out and play video games or watch movies or something like that. My free time is very precious. And also in that, writing is fantastic. Writing is wonderful. And I've met so many people and I'm so fortunate to be in the position I'm in. I never want to do this for a 100% living. I don't want to find a nice little quiet cabin somewhere and write for the rest of my life. If I suddenly came into untold amounts of money, I don't want to do that. If I did, I can think of so many other things that I want to do. I'd still write, but writing is a hobby for me that I'm very fortunate has been able to give me opportunities like this one. Not that I'm not grateful for ones like this, but I could never be someone who writes full time all the time. It's just something I recognize in myself. And a part of that is that I'm not as avid a reader as just about every other author that I meet. Again, just because of time. And thank you, Mickey. Yeah, I am a good client. Thanks.
Well, first of all, Mark, I'm not very talented. The rest of you guys might be, but I'm not very talented. I'm just here. And second, I am also I'm pretty bad when it comes to reading too. In fact, I'm only reading again right now because I started a new show. and for every author that comes on, I have to read their whole book. And so now I'm reading a shitload of books again. But otherwise it was, you know, I'm more of a maybe one book every couple months kind of guy, where I know people that, you know, read a couple books a week. And, you know, so Stephen King, a man that I do have a great deal of admiration for, you know, has said that if you don't have time to read, you don't have time to write. Now, I don't really agree with that. You know, Stephen King, I love you, but a lot of the things he said in On Writing, you got to really take them with a very large grain of salt, coming from someone who is a multimillionaire and writes full time. I would love to have writing be generate enough income that it would be a full-time job, but I will never write 40 hours a week. I can't do it. I love doing things like this too much. I have this show and I've got a new show coming up and I write and I also am I'm also a vet tech and I'm also a minister. And so I do all sorts of things and I like that. And sometimes it gets a little overwhelming. Yeah. But when I get free time, I too will just sit on my ass on the couch and I'll turn on a Marvel movie and that's it. Daddy's not getting off the couch for the rest of the night. And you know what? Maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not. But I do have, you know, 2 or 3 days a week that I know that I have. Okay, I've got these hours during the day that I can actually take, and I can use that for reading. I can use it for podcast stuff, or I can use it for writing. And I've learned to not feel bad about it anymore. And I just recently learned that to not feel bad about it, because all of this stuff that we do is still part of being a creative. And I think that being a little bit more diversified is actually not bad. There are authors that can really create a large volume of books. Katie can publish, you know, 3 to 4 books a year. I cannot do that. You know, I'm one book a year kind of guy at the most. And that's because I have so many other things going on in my life. So there's nothing wrong with having leisure time. In fact, having leisure time is sometimes what makes life worth living. And if writing is a fun hobby, then damn, it's a fun hobby. Hell yeah. I mean, wait, you don't have to try to force it to be anything. It's not. And that's okay. There's not a wrong way to do this. As long as you love it, then you're good, man.
And a lot of times when you push yourself too hard for one thing or another, you end up burning yourself out.
Hell yeah.
You know, Jason, you say I put out 3 to 4 books a year, and historically, yes, but in the last couple of years, I've slowed down to give myself more time to write books so that I have more time for other things. I can do a little bit more reading. I've branched out in the last couple of years into speaking and teaching, and I enjoy doing that. I like getting out there and talking to new authors and giving them the tools that I've learned. And so that takes away time from writing. It also does take away time from reading. So I've slowed down on the writing because I'm doing other things that are still in that creative sphere. And a lot of time for me too, reading is more beta reading. I'm reading other authors' works on a critical level, which is different than reading for pleasure. So I'm not getting that relaxation reading in as much as I would like to do, but I am still technically reading.
You know, and I stopped doing it, Katie. I stopped doing the beta reading. I mean, I love my author friends, but it takes a lot of time. And when someone sends you something to beta read, they don't mean read that leisurely over the next month. They mean sit down and read it in the next week and give me your feedback. And guys, I love you. I just can't do it anymore. It's too much. It's too much. I used to beta read for Tara Eden, who writes high fantasy, and she's very prolific. And every month I'd be getting something else. I'm like, oh, hon, I love you. I love your books, but it's not going to happen anymore. Just can't do it. But I will say, Mark, Jenna, and Katie, I don't know why you haven't done this yet. Put Vicious on your to-be-read list. Vicious by V.E. Schwab, Victoria Schwab. If you're going to read one book in the next 6 months, read that fucking book because it's amazing. You will absolutely love it. But yeah,
she's
so
pretty awesome. She was at Phoenix with us 2 years ago. I got to sit down on a panel with her and she was awesome. I can bet her books are equally as awesome.
Oh my Lord. She is an incredible speaker. Holy crap. And she actually did she spoke at the big Tolkien festival or whatever in England. I think it was last year, whatever they call it. And, her speech was, I mean, it was epic. It was amazing. So if you ever have free time, Katie, which I know you never do, but look up Doors. It's just a speech called Doors. And oh my God, it's mind blowing. But yeah, so what were we talking about besides how much I love V.E. Schwab? And I could not get her for the new show this year, Katie. I was going back and forth with her publicist, and finally she said no, she doesn't have time. She's going to be touring in the UK again. I'm like, fly me to the UK then, all right?
She's a band author, but she's a great author and a great speaker. Like I said, I sat in with a panel with her 2 years ago, and man, there was a question she could not answer. So she was really fun to be around, and I have no doubt that and they are on my radar whenever I finally get time for pleasure reading.
Oh yeah, yeah, pleasure reading. What am I reading right now, Katie? What am I pleasure reading? I just got something. Well, I just finished Predators by Michael Brent Collins. That was pretty good. It was kind of a suspense thriller. And then what am I reading next? I think I'm reading one of Miranda O's books. Miranda's been on our show before. Yep. Canadian author. I think she calls it kind of a chick lit type of thing, but it's supposed to be really funny. So I'm going to read one of her books next because I thought it'd be nice to have something a little bit more fun and lighthearted too.
Do you see what
you know, Josh? While I appreciate that, I don't think you could pull off a shaved head and no beard like I can.
You read his book.
Oh, Joe, Amongst the Killing by Joe Compton. That looks cool, Joe. I didn't know you wrote books.
That sounds like a book I have on my bookshelf right now.
You know, speaking of beta reading, I know the way that I do beta reading, not necessarily the way I'm reading it, but the way I've been requesting it from my betas, specifically because of what you mentioned, Jason, where a lot of times you're dumping a whole book on somebody and you're expecting that response immediately. And beta readers have, you know, busy lives too. They can't always jump on it. So what I do is I give sections out now instead of dumping the whole book. So you might get a 10,000 word chunk. And if you can get to that, great. And a lot of my beta readers seem to respond better to that. And they can go small bits at a time through the story.
Does it seem to be working out better then?
Yeah, I get a faster response. And I usually get more in-depth response too, because they're not looking at the whole plot. They're looking at smaller elements of the plot.
Okay. Now, what about you two? Do you guys use beta readers at all, Jenna or Mark?
Nope. I really wish I had some. I kind of do. I have my best friend. She's an archaeologist, but we met in undergrad and she has an English degree. So she helps me a lot. And then I have a girl named Lexi, the inspiration for Lexel in Reborn. And she looks through all my work as well. I don't know if I have enough patience for a beta reader. I think their feedback would be wonderful. I have so many other things on the go and trying to juggle being a teacher, being a middle school teacher, relatively new mom, trying to figure out how to write, how to find an editor, finding publishers. Marketing is a huge thing right now. And to find time to read. I know you guys have been talking about whether you have time to read or whether you don't. And it's something that it's a struggle to fit in. I used to read 2 to 3 books a month. Obviously a lot of them were YA, so a little bit shorter, but as a teacher, I still, while it's not a technical requirement of my job, I feel it is a requirement of my job to know what my students are reading, to give them suggestions for new books. And so it's really a time crunch in every one of my days. I have maybe an hour to an hour and a half of free time in which I have to finish any marking and do any marketing promos, blogs, posts that are due, write and read. So I'm really a daydreamer that has to use my drive to work, which luckily is a long one, to really plan out what my scenes are going to be. And then have 20 to 25 minutes to get it down. People think I'm crazy. A lot of writers write, you know, 3-4 hours at a time on a Sunday afternoon. And I don't have that luxury. Naps are maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. So, and I have to do a load of laundry. So I do a lot of blog posts and a lot of speeches about, and interviews. Yes, Mickey. About that your writing style doesn't have to be like anyone else's and your writing techniques don't have to be the same as anyone else's. My promos are online because I don't have the luxury of dragging a toddler to conferences and things like that. There's a lot of things I want to get going and try and do, get some beta readers, have a newsletter is one that's been on my to-do board for a year and a half. And so I just have to prioritize and think what I'm going to do and when, and try and work it into the schedule in the limited amount of time that I have. Luckily I have summers off, so there's a little bit more leeway there and I get a lot of projects done. So maybe sometime this summer I will get a newsletter ready and try and find a few more people that are willing to read through my work and give me some more feedback. Fingers crossed, it's on the to-do list.
For myself, I'm very similar that I don't have beta readers per se. For my first release for Death Dresses Poorly, I kind of had that beta read, but it was me reading it to my wife. My wife and I kind of have this thing when we had the time anyway, and our schedules weren't all messed up, where I would read to her. She's perfectly capable of reading on her own, but it was just some good quiet time that we spent together. I read her the entire Harry Potter series, that kind of thing. So
that might be the most romantic thing I've heard in weeks. I mean, seriously, dude, you read to your wife. That's amazing. Bravo, man. You're doing it right, brother.
I read to my husband, but it's because he doesn't read and won't read. So less romantic there.
Well, it's all on how you sell it.
We're going to take some stories right now. I did read Death Dresses Poorly for my wife. And part of it was because I was really proud of it. And I was proud of how quickly I wrote it, but how fleshed out it was. But also, I wanted to find out her feedback on one particular note, and that was the fact that I had used my oldest son's name as the name of the main character. Now, they didn't really share anything in common, but I used it. It was a name that I was familiar with, and it kind of suited the character, I thought. I was looking for a more modern name, and that's what he has. And we got through it, and she gave me some great feedback. And at the end, just before it got published, she very, very honestly came to me and said, "Mark, I'm not comfortable with it. He's not an enviable character necessarily, right? I mean, he's a good character, but can we change his name?" And I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." And bless her for being so honest about that. She very easily could have just let it slide and hoped that it was just maybe something that was just bugging her. But no, she was totally honest with me about it. As for Catching Hell Parts 1 and 2, other than some great feedback from my editor, I really wanted it to be my story. This is a story I wanted to tell since I was 15 years old, and I wanted to make it as clean as I possibly could, but by opening it up to beta readers, just as you said, I don't have the patience for it. It's such a monster, but also I really wanted this book to be entirely my voice, and I want it to sell. I want to tell you all the stories that I have to tell, but just getting it, just the fact that I can hold a physical copy of it in my hand was a victory for me, and it's all my baby. And I think a lot of them, it takes place in a world, in a fantasy world that I've been writing in, as I said, since I was 15 years old, called the Ryujin world. And I think everything that kind of goes into that world is going to be all me. Everything that I write outside of that world, like Death Dresses Poorly, and the book that I'm working on right now is outside of it. If I have the beta readers available, if I can read it to my wife again and get her feedback, especially with what I'm working on right now, because I'm writing one for her because she loves me, but epic fantasy is not her genre at all. So she's like, "I really wish I could read your books." I'm like, "Well, maybe I'll read them to you at some point, but I'm too busy reading to my kids. I want to write something that even without me reading to her and asking her opinion, she would pick up. She would be someone who would write for it or read it on her own. And I, I really want her feedback on that as well. So again, she'd probably be a beta reader for that.
Okay. Well, that's understandable. And so two things, you know, yep. And Josh's comment just popped up on here. And that's what the first thing I wanted to talk about. Josh says he usually doesn't give a book to beta readers until it's been through a couple rounds of edits. And I am the same way. That's my cat, Leah, by the way. She only likes to come into the office when I'm working. So I do the same thing. I don't like people to mess around with my core concept. I like to have everything out. I like to have everything down. And I like to have it looking nice and pretty before I give it to other people to look at. And sometimes that is just before it goes back to the publisher. And that's very important because I have never had a book that I sent out to a beta reader that they didn't find something wrong with it. And finding that thing that's wrong before it goes into publication is way easier to fix than once it's already up there. With KDP, we can pull stuff up and down fairly easily, but I'll tell you what, it's going to jack your anxiety up through the roof once you start getting feedback that, oh, I found this or this or this. And it also makes you look a lot more professional when it's nice and clean when it's up there, obviously. But I do have some advice for you guys, because this is a show about writing advice as well as just talking. I would strongly suggest using beta readers in some form or another, whether it's an editor who can act as a beta reader or whether it's a beta reader. And I would really strongly suggest using someone outside of your immediate family. My first beta readers were my wife, my mom, close friends, things like that. And they aren't willing to be as hard on you as some people are. And I think it's very important that you get that honest feedback or someone who's actually looking for F-ups in your work. It's really important that you do that because your work is just going to be stronger. They're not going to change your voice. They're not going to change your story, but they might just catch a couple pretty big screw-ups that would have made you look a little silly down the road. So going forward, I would say that finding beta readers, you know, and you can find them in groups on Facebook. You know, there are beta readers for hire. I know you can hire beta readers. You know, I've never done that. But if you start asking people, you know, in these writing groups and in literary groups, you'll be able to find some beta readers. And I think that they will really help you going forward in being more confident in your work and knowing that you've really put your kind of your best foot forward, I guess, so to speak. Sorry, I know that sounds like a weird sales pitch or something like that. I promise I don't want to be your beta reader, so don't.
No, it's me. Okay.
I'm not going to do that. But it is an important thing, I think.
Well, I don't have beta readers. I really do rely on editors, and I really believe in their feedback. I know a lot of people are like, I don't want an editor. They'll change everything, and they don't understand the story. And I found that 99% of the time, any suggestion an editor makes, any change they want to make, it's usually makes it better.
That's their job.
And so sometimes I'll have an editor go through it, and then I'll submit to a publishing house. Then it goes through 2, 3, 4 edits with them as well. And other than a few changes, because I write series, other than a few things they want to cut out that I know are going to play a role in things later on, I usually take their advice, because I'm not so arrogant an author to think that everything I do is right and perfect. It hurts sometimes. My very first book published, I had to cut out like 50,000 words. And because she's like, ouch. Don't do this. I know. It's because I learned later on there. I learned later instead of earlier that there's like, you know, word counts and suggested word counts for genres. So that's a whole nother topic. But to cut out stuff that you slaved on is hard. And they're like, you don't need it. I'm like, okay, probably not, but it took me like 5 hours. They're like, you don't need this sentence. You said the same thing earlier. I'm like, but it's pretty. And so they, you know,
that would be a darling and you've got to kill those babies.
What my first editor told me is, cut it, but get a Word document and paste it in all your deletions in there. And then you can do one of two things with it. You can use it for blog posts, interviews, behind the scenes, sneak peeks with characters and do all that. Yeah. And so I have files and files and files of deletions that I've never used, but so I use it for the second reason, that it's not really gone. So as I've gone forward, I have 5 books published now. Whereas before I used to cry when passages were cut, I used to cry. I lost prologues. I lost whole chapters and I would weep. I find now I'm pretty ruthless and, I do the cutting now and I don't need my editor to tell me it. And if they do, I'm like, yeah, it's gone. and so it's just, it's kind of evolved and it gets a lot easier to cut, out stuff that you genuinely don't need. So I agree with you with beta readers. I just think I use editors, a little bit as beta readers.
And that's good too. As long as you're somebody other than you is going through your work. And,
Somebody that is a critical eye is looking over your manuscript before you release it in any public way. That's absolutely it. And there's no right or wrong way to utilize these readers that look at your stuff before it goes to print. It's just one of the tools in your arsenal to make sure that your manuscript is as good as it can possibly be before the real readers out there are getting a hold of it, because they're the ones that will write the reviews and you don't want the reviews to look negatively.
Well, and I have one self-published book, but most of my, all the other ones are through publishers. So I'm hoping that if they accept it, there's at least something good about it and that they will help me fix the flaws that of course are going to be there. And so that's my hope, and I accept their feedback.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we're getting to the end of our show here, Katie. Is there anything else we want to add before we're wrapping up?
I think we should tackle this topic again another week, because we could go on for a while on this. And I think the viewers out there, they've been making some great comments. And I think if we went a little further in depth with it, we could make a full another show and get a lot more of this audience interaction, which has been spectacular. Thank you guys in the audience for posting your comments and for helping spur the conversation on further. We really enjoy the interaction.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. And Joe, I would love to read your book. I just need it. I mean, I need a like signed hardback over here. Is Joe in Canada too?
No, he's in the US.
Oh, good deal. Because it cost an arm and a leg to ship stuff from Canada. Holy crap, man. Trying to trade books with you guys over in Canada. Like, Jesus, it cost $25.
Yeah, but it goes both ways, because it can be expensive to get stuff up from the States as well. I mean,
well, that's true.
I can't be ordering stuff off Amazon.com. That's my God. It's not CA all the way.
Oh, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And for everybody out there watching, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know we started a little bit late, but I like this fun new platform we did here. This is a good call, Katie. So I like that.
We might have to utilize it more often. And like we said at the beginning of the show, guys, let us know if you would rather see these on Facebook or if you'd prefer to see them on YouTube, because we're kind of playing around with which platform will give us the best way to reach out to the audience. So post your comments. Let us know.
Wonderful. All right, guys, that's it for tonight. Until next week. Cheers.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.